And you're
ready. I wrote in my phone, and I answer it, and it's my husband that said, were you going to take me too?
You left without you.
Hang on, that's
for
Monday, April 13th, 2009. We'll come to order.
Driving.
We will open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 13. Michael Salvaggio, please.
He wasn't very happy.
Good morning. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. I'm coming here this morning to make a brief statement about House Joint Resolution 13. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, House Joint Resolution 13 proposes allowing the full faith and credit of the State of Oregon to back bonds used to supplement local school district capital costs. The State Treasurer's Office, which would manage such bond sales, feels that this would be a worthy and practical use of the state's bonding authority. Our Debt Management Division, which already manages statewide bond sales, is precisely set up to manage these kinds of sales. Since the passage of H.J.R. 13 would, at the ballot would authorize bond sales but not in itself issue any, the State Treasurer's Office would want to be involved in the drafting and passage of any future implementation language to ensure that issuances include proper oversight and criteria, provide for adequate management, and remain within prudent debt limits. As it stands, H.J.R. 13 is a well-crafted method of supporting local school district improvements, and we support the passage of H.J.R. 13.
Thank you. And I assume that you've read the Dash 2 amendments and that the remarks you're making are really directed at the Dash 2 amendments. Have I got that right?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, yes, that is correct. The Treasury was involved in the crafting of the Dash 2 amendments, and I believe we've transmitted a letter to that effect that I neglected to mention that in this morning's comments.
Well, sure enough. That is what your letter says. Thank you. Are you confident that the amendment has been drafted correctly to accomplish the ends that the sponsors have in mind, and the Treasury, assuming that appropriate legislation is adopted, the Treasury can manage the part of this that falls to the Treasury?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, all that is correct. The Treasury believes that the amendments were crafted correctly and that the Treasury is set up to manage this. Again, assuming that the implementation language is also done correctly, and we would want to be involved in
of any law in that would implement this
precisely
provision. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony this morning.
Thank you, Mr.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard this morning on H.J.R. 13? If not, we will close the public hearing on H.J.R. 13. There's no reason not to work this morning, is there? Oh, no fiscal. Colleagues, we don't have a fiscal. Can't work 13 this morning. Thank you. Let's move ahead with the public hearing on House Bill 2672. And we'll hear first from Mazin. Good morning.
Morning. Dear members of the committee, it's a great Monday morning. In front of you in your packet is several pieces of information about House Bill 2672. However, just to give you a brief background on House Bill 2672, been in the work for a while now. It was introduced in the 2007 session as a concept of going from the taxation of moist snuff from the value base, the 65% other tobacco product, to per ounce or by weight level of taxation. There was a lot of talk and discussion and work evaluated with this proposal, and finally, I guess we have, with Representative Gelser, have introduced a few amendments, and I think we finally have something to chew on.
Oh, we knew that one was coming, didn't we? Colleagues, any response to this presentation? Representative Gelser, would you like to be heard?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. For the record, I'm Sarah Gelser, state representative from Corvallis and Philomath. And over the course of the past 2 years, I have developed the unusual habit of frequenting tobacco shops to ask questions about chewing tobacco and moist snuff. I think perhaps I hit the bottom about a month and a half ago when I woke up at 5:30 in the morning, really panicked about the price of certain products and found myself on the phone to Fred Meyer wanting to know who specialized in moist snuff at the Corvallis store. And I'll inform you that no one at the Corvallis, Fred Meyer, is their moist snuff specialist, so I had to get in the car and go there to ask them who was buying what was the most expensive, what was the least expensive, and ask to borrow their calculator so I could start calculating tax backwards. They thought I was odd. So House Bill 2762 is the result of a couple of years of work. Speaker Hunt began working on this in the 2007 session, and one of the concerns that was raised, if you'll remember this, was some of the folks from the Tobacco Free Coalition were concerned that a weight-based tax might in fact increase youth access to tobacco products. The reason that I was interested in working on this issue is that more and more young people are turning to other tobacco products. And this is a time in our policy history in the state of Oregon where these products become particularly attractive, not just to young people, but also to adults who want to maintain their tobacco fix in public places after the passage of the Smoke-Free Workplace Law. And if you spend any time reading through tobacco marketing journals, which I do on occasion, you'll find that that is a niche in the market that folks are looking at. How do you get these products to folks in these smoke-free places so that you can maintain basically the addiction that people have to these tobacco products? Oregon has become a testing ground for some of these products. I have, I don't know if any of you are aware of Snus, Camel Snus. You can see that this is an advertisement that's clearly geared towards young people. Bright colors, the fancy Camel. It talks about all the places that you can use Snus, which comes in little packs and comes in candy types of flavors for people to use. These were papered all around different neighborhoods in Portland to try to urge people to take up a snoozing habit. And this is another example of another tobacco product or a smokeless tobacco product. And what you'll find in the Dash 7 amendment is a description of what moist snuff is. It's described as the traditional description of moist snuff that you've seen in the past, but it's basically any tobacco product that is not intended to be combusted. So this would include things like snus, things like the Longhorn chewing tobacco, or all of these other kinds of pieces. The way that we tax chewing tobacco right now is different than the way that we tax cigarettes. If you tax cigarettes, there is a price per pack. It doesn't matter what the cost of the pack of cigarettes is. Every pack of cigarettes has the same price. However, right now, chewing tobacco, this type of tobacco, you pay your tax. It's an ad valorem tax, so it's 65% of the wholesale price of what you pay of the product. So the very expensive products are paying a much higher level of tax than the very inexpensive types of products, which end up paying hardly any tax at all. And if you look at the point of tobacco taxes, which I personally do not see the point of tobacco taxes as being to raise revenue. This bill is not about raising revenue. This bill is about recapturing the public health costs that are raised by tobacco. And make no mistake, these are very dangerous products. They still cause cancer. They'll cause your teeth to rot out. They'll cause your tongue to get sores. These are very bad for you. And they are very bad for our economy. They're very bad for our public budgets, and it makes no sense why a cheap tobacco product that is much more accessible to young people than others smokers should pay less of a tax than others. So what this bill says is let's even the playing field and charge everyone the same way and make every moist snuff product has the same health impact. Everyone should pay the same tax. So it would move to a weight-based tax. In order to address the concerns that were raised last session by the Tobacco Free Coalition, we went back and looked at the wholesale prices of all of the tobacco products. And what we wanted to ensure was that we weren't making any tobacco products more accessible to people, no matter what their age was. So we attempted to set the tax rate close to where the most expensive product is right now. And that came out to $1.78 per ounce. And because these come in usually 1.2-ounce containers, each of these are 1.2-ounce containers, that is $2.14 per pack or per can. The estimates of revenue you have in front of you from MAZN, you would see an increase in revenue in Oregon this biennium of about $5.5 million. But again, that is not the goal of this. The goal of this is to push these things out of reach of young people. There are a couple of other reasons why this bill is particularly important. And that is, if you read through the bill, you'll find that when the Master Settlement Agreement for Smokeless Tobacco Products went into effect, there was really only one manufacturer that was predominant in the market in terms of smokeless tobacco products, and that was U.S. Tobacco. And as a result, today, U.S. Tobacco is the only manufacturer that signed on to the Master Settlement Agreement for Smokeless Tobacco Products. Now, the financial aspects of the Master Settlement Agreement expired recently, and that's the part where everyone paid into the foundation to do tobacco prevention. But what has not expired are the requirements in the Master Settlement Agreement that prohibit manufacturers from targeting youth and doing youth marketing and youth advertising. And what this bill does is require the other manufacturers that are not currently complying with the Master Settlement Agreement to choose to either comply with the youth access restrictions that are in the Master Settlement Agreement for smokeless tobacco companies or pay a price per can into an escrow account that the state would hold. The state would not be allowed to use any of this money, and the interest would accrue to that escrow account, which could then be released to that tobacco company when they chose to comply with restrictions and agreed that targeting young people is not such a good thing. Another amendment that you'll have in your packet adds a sampling ban that would state that free samples of this product can't be given to people under the age of 21, nor can they be offered in areas that do not have restricted access to people who are under the age of 21. A couple more points that are very, very significant. I think MAZN has a sheet at your desk that I saw that shows the increase in the market in terms of which products are being used. At the beginning of this, if you look back early to 2001, the higher-end products were dominating the market. However, the inexpensive products, those that are not currently subject to the Master Settlement Agreement, are making rapid gains in the market. This is what people are buying, and this is what young people are buying. That is why it is absolutely critical that they be held to the same youth access restrictions as the other markets. Some may come and tell you that this is unfair, that this is a bill that unfairly favors one tobacco company, U.S. Tobacco. I have two responses to that. First, right now the playing field is unfair. You have one company that is taxed at a higher rate and must comply with restrictions on their marketing and business practices. Anytime you correct a situation that's been unfair previously, it feels unfair to the favored son previously who had had the favored treatment when you level the playing field. The second thing that I would argue is that U.S. Tobacco, and those of you that know me know that I am no fan of the tobacco industry at all, but U.S. Tobacco, which is complying with these and is paying this higher tax, remains today an extraordinarily profitable organization that continues to manage to sell its products, continues to have enough money in its coffers that it could contribute substantial sums of money to defeating Measure 50 just 2 years ago. So I have no worries that it would be possible for a tobacco company to comply with these same restrictions and continue to make significant profits off of a product that causes significant harm to children and others. This simply makes it fair. Again, $1.78 is the price per ounce, which would be $2.13. I urge you to support this bill, not because it will bring us increased revenue, but because it will bring increased health to the young people of this state and to people who are not minors by making it more difficult to access these very dangerous and deadly products. This is a fair tax policy. It is smart youth access policy, and this is the right time to do it so we can stunt the growth of this product and our new smoke-free workplace environment. And I am happy to answer any questions you might have.
A lot of material went by very quickly. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I should mention in the amendments that you have in front of you, the amendments that I would recommend that you move are the Dash 2 amendments, which creates an escalator for the tax beginning in July of 2019. So that is the Dash 2 amendment. It would be up to the committee's pleasure to choose between the Dash 3 and the Dash 4 amendments. This sets the rate of the escrow payment for the non-compliant industries that are not choosing to comply with restrictions on youth marketing. And the Dash 3 amendment gives you a 60 cents per product pay-in, and the Dash 4 is a 40 cent per product pay-in. Again, should the companies choose not to market to youth, they would not have to pay these prices. The Dash 5 amendment is the amendment that adds in the sampling ban, and the Dash 7 amendment, of course, is the one that sets the rate and requires compliance with Sections 3, 5, and 7 of the Smokeless Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement, and urges these companies requires that these companies not market to young people.
Thank you. Now I do have a question. Do you have a preference for the Dash 3 or the Dash 4?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or is there a basis for choosing between the two? Maybe that's a better way of asking it.
I think it's really up to the committee. I believe that either would work. Both of these are lower than what is suggested in the national literature. The model legislation sets the rate at 75 cents per can. Again, my hope is that this will be an irrelevant amendment. It would be my hope that all tobacco companies would agree that they don't want to market to youth. And if they agree to those terms, they will not have to pay that price.
Is that enforceable?
Pardon, Mr. Chair?
Wouldn't a tobacco company be able to claim they aren't marketing to youth and then do it anyway?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do give the Department of Justice compliance and monitoring ability, and this bill actually gives them greater latitude and teeth in enforcing current tobacco-related restrictions related to youth marketing.
Thank you. Anything else for Representative Yeltsin? Representative Riley.
Just to follow up on your last question, aren't there guidelines in place already that U.S. Tobacco follows, and those are the guidelines that would be followed by the other tobacco companies if they decide to apply?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Riley, that is correct. U.S. Tobacco is currently the only smokeless company that is on that master settlement agreement and that has agreed not to market to youth, and it would be my hope that the other tobacco companies would agree not to market to youth.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's hear from Mazin on the revenue statement or other materials that we've got that we didn't get to before. Please.
Mr. Chair, again, members of the committee, as you know, usually with these kind of bills, I try to put a presentation and PowerPoint and so on to give you. I think I probably don't need to do that this time. Representative Gelser did an even better job than I could even dream of. So, 2672, let's go one piece by piece here. The bill itself, that which you have, most of the bill you have, chapter 1, page 1 through page 3 is what would concern the revenue changes and the tax changes. The rest of the bill, it has to deal with the terms of the Master Settlement Agreement. The changes that you heard about in the amendments will be in like page 11. That's when you have on line 20 and 21, that's the place where you have the blank, where you would inject the points, the 60 cents and the 40 cents and the master settlement agreement issue. So that's the rest of it is primarily issues of the legal implementation of the master settlement agreement into the Oregon statutes. I have in your packet included an analysis from the AG, from the Attorney General, House Bill, it is titled House Bill 2672, Department of Justice Summary. That's what they have furnished the committee for the sections that they are talking about with the Master Settlement Agreement, and it goes with the escrow enforcement from Sections 18 to 20, Section 7 to 9, Section 11, and so on. The AG representative also is here today, and as the chair probably indicated, we will hear from her after this. Now, to go to the amendments in front of you, the Dash 2 amendment in your packet primarily puts the escalated clause. However, this basically would be said of as an indexing process, indexing to the CPI. This, however, does not come into effect until July 1st, 2019. When it comes in, it comes as 0.25, as you would find on line 8 of the amendment, as a quarter of percentage or one quarter of the what the CPI of the U.S. City Average Consumer Price Index of the previous 12 months. And what this amendment would do is try to catch up with the increase in taxes that would have come otherwise from increases in price. As you know, when you tax based on price or value, ad valorem tax, what you do in effect is you tax on the increases in quantity and price. So changes in quantity and changes in price changes the tax. So Q multiplied by P, if you will, in economic terms. Then you have a price, a new tax. That's, I know Representative Berger finds that easier to follow. This thing here would allow the price factor to come back, however, not fully come back, 25% of it in July 1st, 2019, while the increase that is due to quantity will continue in both cases, whether it's in the current regime or in the proposed regime of taxation. The Dash 3 amendment, as you would have in your packet, what it does is...
Excuse me just a moment.
Yes,
before
sir.
We go on. I need to understand this indexing a little bit better, and maybe others do as well. If I understand it correctly, the base rate is whatever it is on August 31st, 2017. Is that right? And then it's indexed by a quarter of the percentage.
Right.
So between then and 19, and then each year thereafter. Is that, have I read that correctly?
I think what it says at the beginning, Mr. Chair, when you start in July 1st, 2019, so that's starting the fiscal year 2020 primarily.
Right.
And it takes the U.S. average CPI for the last 12 consecutive months that ended August 31st, 2017. So it takes them back 2 years.
Yes.
Which is a lower level than what you would have at 2019. and then take 25% of that, which in effect has the result of lowering that escalating process to
okay.
That's what it does.
And it's done each biennium, not each year. Line six.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. I think I have it now. Anyone else have questions on the dash twos? Thank you. Please go ahead.
All right. The dash three, as you would have, they are the fill in the blank for the, as we said on page 11, for the master settlement agreement escrow payments. And this is the 60-cent escrow payment per can payments into the master's escrow account. The dash four gives the other alternative, as Representative Gelser had mentioned, from the 60 cents to the 40 cents. Your dash five is the marketing restrictions and free sample restrictions. And then you go to the dash seven. The dash seven is the piece that had to deal with the tax issue. And in the dash seven, you would have primarily moving or taking away the moist snuff from the current taxing regime of 65% of wholesale prices and moving it to $1.78 per ounce. However, it also, in line 10, you will find that it makes a minimum tax of $2.14 per container. What this minimum tax have actually done is put the floor on the lighter weight cans and put that floor at $2.14. This is primarily the clause that allowed this measure to be revenue neutral, is the $2.14. Now, the reason for that, members of the committee, is when you have a lighter product and you're taxing it at a certain level that is an ounce and it is lower and higher, this lighter product usually is a more expensive product. So if you are taxing it per ounce, what you end up doing is taxing the higher priced product in the same way that you would have taxed less expensive. So they would end up paying less in essence. The 214 kind of puts that floor down and allows for the revenue neutrality to come in. Now,
wait a minute. Are you saying that this bill is revenue neutral?
Well, it wasn't revenue neutral without the 214. Now it is we'll talk about the.
But with the 214, you think it is?
The 214, Mr. Chair, allows for revenue neutrality and allow for the coming biennium, which is 2009-11 biennium, mm-hmm. to have additional amounts of revenue in what would have otherwise be the current revenue under the current regime. So you would have $5.5 million biennium in addition to. This is accomplished by having that combination.
Mr.
Now,
Chair?
Yes, Representative Gelser.
A clarifying question for Mazin. On the issue of neutrality, are we talking about two types of neutrality? There's a positive revenue impact from the package overall, the way it's put together. But in terms of the higher priced products, it's revenue neutral in that we are not losing, that we've set the floor high enough that it's neutral for those higher priced products. They're not paying less.
Ah.
Well, that is true, Representative Gelser. However, also in addition, remember, because you're taxing on quantity and you remove the price from the tax and you have established a minimum, sooner or later that increase in price of the CPI that otherwise would have been in play would reach the level that you have set as the minimum. The minimum would be cut on sooner or later. So if you put it in the perspective, that's why in the 2013-15 biennium, you start heading to exactly the same or close to the same amounts that you're hitting today. From that point on until the escalator hits, you actually are less in revenue in that sense. But for the first three bienniums, you are truly making more than you'll probably be making less in the coming three biennium. Now, because the escalator on the CPI or the increase is outside the level that we usually look at, it's 2020 and above, I haven't examined whether we actually go back into that revenue neutrality, and I'm thinking that probably would be something that the 2019 legislature would look at and re-examine.
And you'll be here to tell them what it means.
I hope not. But I've been here in 1909, so it's be a long time. No, I was not. This was a joke. Okay.
All right.
So in that sense, the revenue neutrality, if you think about it in the longer term, that's what we're talking about, where it is increasing more now and it will produce less in the future. And if you want to put it on a sum, and in that, also to continue with the revenue impact statement, as you see, the same concept, because we're losing the escalator in the essence of... You're losing the price which you used to pay on. You start the revenue starts diminishing since it's not increasing as an automatic escalator that comes with the increase in price. So to look at the revenue impact statement, as the first line we have in the table, in the fiscal year 2010. Old revenue means the revenue as we look at it today. It should have said current revenue, but this is the statement on top says preliminary, so I reserve the right to change these words. So this is current revenue rather than old. And at the amounts we're looking at, we're looking about, as you would see in the line 26, 27, and so on, that's 53 to about $55 million a biennium. This is based on our March revenue forecast. The March revenue forecast sees stabilization, and actually this time what we are looking at is an actual reduction in the quantities used in moist snuff and mostly all tobacco. This is due to the CHIPRA, the federal law that just kicked in place that will introduce a percentage. And this time we're looking at 3.2% reduction impact of the moist snuff and other tobacco products. So in that sense, this will be a little lower than what current revenue would be. And the increase here starts splitting between quantities that are being reduced, prices that are not being reduced because they work with the manufacturing process and the marketplace. That's where you get the new revenue, or based on the proposed law, where you would have, so scratch new and say proposed. Proposed law will be 2964 in the 2010, which gets you about 59 in 09-11, and you could see how the glide down starts from that point on, 58.75, 57.82. The difference in these two amounts is $5.5 million a biennium and the 2009-11 biennium as an additional revenue, 3.44 in 11-13, and almost a million in 13-15. Now, as you would see in the bill itself, it has couple clauses in the third page where it talks about the two different new allocations within the revenue process. You'll find on line 29 of the third page that $1 million is dedicated each biennium for the Department of Justice for expenses related to provisions of medical examination to children who are victims of suspected physical abuse. This is a new program, and this is a new dedication. So the dedication takes the money basically at the beginning. So the $1 million, you would find it as a DOG examination line after the difference. And then there is a 5 in Section 4, line 37, 38, and 39, and 40. You have a $500,000 beginning July 1st, 2009. This is a 2009-11 biennium. That's a $500,000, and I interpreted this as a one-time because it's a pilot program, and it does not say dedicated nor continuous. So this in my reading of this, and I don't know if that's pretty sure that that's what it says legally, at least. It is a pilot program, one-time deal of $500,000 in the biennium. And once that happens, that also comes off the top. So you end up with remaining additional revenue of, if you take these out, in the 2009-11 of $4.01 million, in the 11-13, 2.44, and almost zero at 30,000 below in the 13-15. That's where the glide bit. Those amounts of revenue go back and split within the three different uses that exist today for current amounts of revenue. That's the Oregon Health Plan at 41.54% of the remaining. And these are the additional amount, 1.66 in the 2009-11 biennium for the Oregon Health Plan. The TURA, Tobacco Use Reduction Account, at 4.62, and the rest goes to the general fund. And, of course, those are only the additional revenue, the amounts that exist today, still split as they exist today. So nothing have changed in that sense. So that's a quick glimpse, members of the committee, of the way I've spent my weekend. I'd like to hear about yours.
Thank you. Questions for Mazen on this piece? I have one, and that is, you mentioned that you expect there would be a decrease in sales of this kind of product as a result of this tax. Do you have a good model to tell you to predict what that might be? And if so, what does it show you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's a very interesting question, of course. I was hoping...
Well, you have a great answer to that question when we talk about cigarettes.
So well, that's true.
I was taking a risk.
Well, I was hoping that we glide through this hearing without you asking me a question like that, because I'd have to answer it. First of all, we are looking at a forecast of where the federal impact is. And the federal impact, we've determined, is about 3.2% reduction. Now, what this bill does is change the taxation structure, as it was said. Whether it makes it more fair or changes the, how would you say it in very tactful way, it changes the winners and losers kind of game. What it would do is bring up the tax on the lower priced product, and if not maintain, lower the tax on the higher tax product. So in essence, it it will, if you look into the charts that are put in your packet, the two charts of the products that are being looked at. If you see the first one that talks about the volumes that are being sold as we look at them today, you see that they're actually, with the introduction of the lower priced product, this is tier one and tier three. If you start in the 2001, you start seeing a slow or less volumes being sold from the tier one. This is a more expensive product, tier one. But then in starting 2004 and on, you see that the in general, the amounts or the volumes of the product that is being sold is not reducing. It is not changing. Yes, tier three is coming up very quickly, as you see volumes from almost nothing to incredible amounts of sales. And you see this in the second graph, where you see the levels of growth in volumes, where you see explosive growth in the 2002, about 800% of the tier three. And then, well, it stabilizes to 400%. But then, of course, by the time it's 2007, the rates of growth for the tier three is a lot slower. It's in the 11% or so. But the total increase, the whole market is growing, but most of that growth is coming from the tier three or the lowest priced products. So the market, in a lot of sense, it's not changing in composition and volumes, but the new opportunity for sale, if you will, is coming or being offered by the lower priced product. Now, once you've done new scheme or new system of taxation and imposed it in the marketplace, what you've done is you change the rules of the game. And now what would happen is you start switching between, since the price is going to be almost equalized, from a difference about $3 per peg or $2.50, you're squeezing that difference in price to a lot lower. So the indifference point for the consumer gets closer and closer to each other. So they will be more indifferent or a lot less confused whether they choose the more expensive product or the less expensive product. And in that sense, you're changing the composition of the market. You're not necessarily changing the consumption patterns of the market, because the glide path of the consumption itself is happening. That's what I was afraid that you're going to ask, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I appreciate the answer, I think. Let's. Any further questions? Yes, Representative Vance.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So just so we understand, if the goal of the bill... I probably should ask Representative Gelser this again. The primary goal of your bill is to do exactly what? What is our most important thing that this bill does for us?
I think different people would have different answers. For me, the most important part of this bill is stunting the growth of that Tier 3 market, because that is going primarily to young people. And if you look at that price and difference point, you look at the volume of growth that Mazin just went through, it's primarily in that third tier. When I go to the Fred Meyer or the tobacco shop down on the corner next to the Starbucks in Corvallis and ask them what young people are buying, they're buying the cheapest cans that are right now about $1.78 in Corvallis. Under this bill, the cost of that $1.78 can is going to go up significantly, because the tax alone on it is going to be $2.13. So if you're a kid, all of a sudden it's going to be a whole lot harder to buy that can of tobacco, because the cost is going to increase.
Thank you for that, Representative. Follow up.
Yes, please.
Follow up to Mazin. So, Mazin, do you think that this? Let me back up. Is there a similar technique that we use in other products, the cigarette tax, for example? Is it the same device? It's by the cigarette as opposed to by the price. Is that correct?
The Representative Benz, this is, if you're talking about the taxation scheme, the taxation scheme of per unit, if you will, is a lot more fair to everybody if you are competing as a marketplace. So if you and I and the chair are three companies competing.
And the question was, how are we taxing cigarettes now?
We're taxing cigarettes in the same way, and therefore that makes it, in that way, is more fair to them.
Follow-up. Yes, please.
But by the same way, you mean the proposed way for?
The proposed way is per ounce, so it's per unit. It becomes a unit kind of based tax. Versus per price, which is might or might not be a unit or production or how much productive you are. But if the prices are going up anyhow, you're paying higher tax because the prices are going up. So, and from a fair market point kind of thing is what you're taxing at what time makes it more playing field, if you will, level it off, if you will. If you tax everybody in the same way, regardless of the price giver or the price taker that the market imposes on you.
Well, Mr. Chair, so your opinion is that if this bill is adopted, it is a fairer device than what we're currently using. Is that what I just heard you say?
He's asking you an expert witness question. My the economist.
My, if I would have to put an amendment for this bill, I would start the escalating clause almost immediately, not until 2019. This would make the
dash two would be different.
The dash two would be a little different.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying.
And they not only put it on the 25% of market value. That way, you would be capturing and allowing the transition, if you will, from one system, one taxation scheme to another taxation scheme a bit smoother. Because now you're almost giving a jolt to the system. You're going from one way to the other way. Yes, it is. It is in general, in market conditions, if you want to talk about you're opening the market, freeing it up a little more, changing the rules of the game, it's a much better way of taxation than the ad valorem tax. However, in order to capture this increase in price, in order to maintain also the pressure on the product, in order not to encourage more and more people, if that's one of the policy requirements, you would probably gain a lot by increasing or allowing the escalating process to go with the CPI starting immediately. That's not.
Yeah. Thank you.
Correct.
Yeah. Answer your question.
Yes, it does.
All right. Thank you. Let's go ahead and now that we've got all the committee information, and let's hear from our witnesses. How about we hear from the Department of Justice first? Lisa?
Good morning.
Members of the committee, Chair Barnhart, my name is Lisa Edlund, and I'm an Assistant Attorney General at the Oregon Department of Justice, and I'm here today just to testify on the fiscal impact on the portions of the bill not related to the tax. What I do in my daily job is I deal with the tobacco regulations, cigarettes related to the cigarette MSA, and this bill creates a similar scheme for smokeless products, so there will be an escrow deposit by companies not complying with the smokeless tobacco master settlement agreement, and there will be also the creation of a directory for those products. We currently do that, those companies, for cigarette products, and this will just add on to our responsibilities, a number of companies that sell smokeless products. We have a current staff of one attorney, one paralegal, and one investigator doing these cigarette products, and we anticipate we can add these duties with no fiscal impact using the same staff. And I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Any questions? Representative Bence.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious how if folks do place money into the trust fund.
The escrow account?
Correct, the escrow
yes, account. Yes, and we're in charge of monitoring that and making sure we receive reporting from the distributors. We use that information to make sure that companies, what they should pay, and then we verify with their bank statements what they are paying. They also file paperwork each year to demonstrate that they are paying. If they are not, there are remedies set forth in the statute that allow us to file lawsuits and take other action to make sure that they're paying.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Well, two questions. First, just out of curiosity, how much is in the cigarette trust fund as we speak?
It varies by company, so I couldn't actually speak to that. I'd have to go back. I can go back and look at that. It's based. Each company sets up their own escrow account with their own bank, and so each company maintains that money in their own escrow account. So you'd have to figure out what each company has and then add those all together. And we just make sure that they're all putting the correct amount in. I don't think I've ever actually added that up.
Yes.
Then if someone initiates, well, let's use the state of Oregon, because I think the goal is that the money be available to pay the state for money spent paying for cigarette-related illness. Have we accessed those funds for that purpose?
We have not yet done that.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. What would, since the indication is that we are currently incurring those kind of costs, why haven't we accessed those funds?
Partly because of the way the legislation is written. The money, you would need to bring a suit to show that the company had done, in the case of tobacco companies, you would need to bring a suit to show that they had done something similar to what originally led to the master settlement agreement, and we have not yet done that.
Yeah, well, sure. So
when might, if ever, that occur?
I can't speak to that. I could go back to my office and bring you that information, but I don't know at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there an estimate now of how much this legislation would prompt the company to contribute to that account? Do we know how much this legislation would end up funding this account?
Well, you would have to figure out how many, Representative Benz, you'd have to figure out how many companies there are that would not participate and then figure out their sales, and from that you could estimate. At this point, I don't know how many companies would or would not participate.
Right, right. Last question.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's of interest to me to see how we can, as a legislative body, force these businesses to engage in this kind of behavior. I take it that that's not an issue. It's clear legally that we can legislatively force these companies to do exactly what's in this bill. This is not going to be challenged. This is a given. Is that correct?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, in the case of the Master Settlement Agreement, it was challenged a number of times, and each time it has been upheld as regulation that we can enact.
Okay, but I'm not talking about the Master Settlement Agreement. I'm talking about the parallel arrangement that this bill contemplates.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, I cannot guarantee you that someone wouldn't challenge it. All I can go on is our basis in the Master Settlement Agreement for cigarettes, that has been upheld. Companies are free to challenge legislation whenever they want.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you. We appreciate your being here this morning, your testimony. I'm also very pleased to know that the office is able to manage this additional work without additional staff. I assume you buy another computer and off you go.
I have great staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Margie Hoffman, Gary Oxley. Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I represent the American Lung Association of Oregon, and I'm also here on behalf of the Tobacco Free Coalition of Oregon, which includes a number of public health organizations, the American Cancer Society, Oregon Dental Association, Northwest Public Health Foundation, Oregon Nurses Association, and a number of other partners. I want to start by thanking Representative Gelser for your 5 a.m. trips to Fred Meyer. I know this is a piece of legislation that you have personally worked very hard on, so I just want to thank you and the committee for hearing it today. I think that a lot of the policy in this bill has been covered pretty extensively, so I want to focus on two key provisions to highlight. There are a number of First of all, this bill is a critical step forward in protecting Oregon youth, both by raising the tax to price children out of the market and also by implementing a sampling ban on other tobacco products outside of places that only serve people who are 21 and up. The state of Washington and the state of California both have similar provisions in place, which makes Oregon a testing ground on the West Coast for tobacco companies marketing specifically to our youth. There are a number of ways that they do this. It's a multifaceted approach in print and media. They also do things like creative design for packaging. So I carry these around in my purse. They are orbs, which are rough-cut tobacco that are dissolvable. So a kid can put this in their mouth when they're in the classroom, and it dissolves. They don't have to spit like some of the other tobacco, the more traditional tobacco products. And it's also, you'll notice it shaped like a cell phone so that they can carry it around in their back pocket, and they won't get busted by a teacher for having a round can of chew in their back pocket. I have it in mellow and in fresh. And the staggering statistic is that according to the Department of Human Services recent study, one in three 17-year-old boys in the state of Oregon is now chewing. The exponential growth that we've seen in the use of other tobacco products is astonishing. So there was a 13-year-old who testified on behalf of the Tobacco Prevention and Education Program from Madras. There was a free sampling event in a convenience store parking lot, and the sample that she plunked up on the dais was three cans of rough-cut chew, which is the equivalent of 100 cigarettes. It takes four cigarettes to become addicted to tobacco. This is a huge problem in our state for our kids. So again, I'm here to support House Bill 2672 with the adoption of all of the amendments, with the exception of the one that you have a choice on. And I'm happy to answer any questions that anybody has.
Thank you. Mr. Oxley.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Gary Oxley, Oxley & Associates. I'm appearing before you this morning on behalf of the United States Smokeless Tobacco. As Representative Gelser said, UST is the only company in the United States, the only smokeless tobacco company in the United States that has signed at this point in time the Master Settlement Agreement as negotiated by the Attorneys General. I am appearing this morning in support of House Bill 2672. We believe in the weight-based methodology. We think that is an excellent way to reassess the revenue for smokeless tobacco in the state of Oregon. Likewise, we support the amendments that have been presented to you for consideration. We believe that as a signatory of the Smokeless Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement, that the playing field should be level in terms of those companies participating and those companies choosing not to participate. The opponents of 2672 are going to talk to you about the fact that this is an issue between two companies. It is an issue regarding marketing between two companies, and that the government really has no business being involved in issues relating to marketing. I would submit to you that the tobacco industry is one of the most regulated industries in the United States. The government, whether it is federal or state, has a significant amount of input in terms of marketing and advertising and distribution of tobacco products. As a signatory of the Smokeless Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement, some of the things that U.S. Tobacco has agreed to relate to prohibitions on outdoor advertising, in arenas, in sports arenas, in advertising where youth make up the largest percentage of a population of an event. We do not advertise on public transportation. We do not advertise in facilities that are comprised of professional sports, basketball, baseball, hockey, sports of that nature. We are subscribing specifically to the terms of this Master Settlement Agreement. We believe in what we signed. We believe it is good public policy, and I urge you to consider that the amendments and the legislation within the four corners of House Bill 2672 goes far beyond marketing issues between two companies. It is a responsible thing that anyone in the tobacco industry should consider doing. With that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I thank you for your time. I'd be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Gelser.
I just wanted to say thank you both and to note for the record the unusual instance of having the Tobacco Free Coalition and U.S. Tobacco sitting at a dais together supporting the same bill, which will reduce access to tobacco for young people.
Thank you. Mark Nelson.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing R.J. Reynolds Tobacco and also Conwood Company, which is a wholly owned by Reynolds Tobacco, which is a smokeless tobacco company. You have before you a bill which in two ways I think has a dramatic impact on fixing what I call market share. Mr. Oxley was absolutely correct. This is not about marketing. It's about fixing market share. And I think that's a very important distinction that I want to make. The bill has two parts, as you know. It changes from our ad valorem tax system to setting taxes on other tobacco products, in this particular case, snus, because it doesn't affect other tobacco products beyond snus. And it also brings into the smokeless tobacco master settlement agreement all other smokeless tobacco manufacturers in the country. And I want to touch upon both of those and walk through both of those for you, Mr. Chair. Reynolds Tobacco opposes the weight-based tax taxation scheme that you have before you. Simply put, this uses tax policy to select a winner among the manufacturers of moist snuff tobacco. The majority of states in Oregon, in the United States, including Oregon, tax moist snuff based upon the wholesale price of the product. 16 states, most recently, have moved to weight-based. Two more were added this year. Most of those states have only changed in recent years because of the intense activity by U.S. Tobacco on this issue. Again, to fix market share. In January 2009, the largest cigarette company, Altria, Philip Morris, acquired U.S. Tobacco, and which is also the largest smokeless tobacco company in the state. They now have the largest tobacco company in the nation. Recently, and you'll find this on your second page of the handout, Morgan Stanley has stated that Altria and U.S. Tobacco needs the states to adopt a weight-based tax method on moist snuff in order to help reduce the price gap with its competitors' lower price products. They stated Altria UST can begin to recoup its cost of requiring UST and estimated that the shift from price to weight-based taxation nationally may provide Altria and UST with a $250 million benefit. As we said before, we tax on an ad valorem basis. This is moving into a weight-based basis. You have before you third piece on your handouts called Oregon Quick Facts Sheet, which we have prepared. And I want to take you to the highlighted sections, and there has been reference to market share. In terms of premium market share, in terms of this product, UST controls 88% of the sales versus 12% for all other manufacturers. Important number. If you go over to what is called the value, your lower price, Tier 2 and Tier 3, U.S. Tobacco only controls 14% of that Tier 2 and Tier 3, all others 86%. Again, this is a very important statistic as to why I'm talking about fixing market share. The net effect of a weight base is you come down to the bottom chart there is the manufacturer's weight price, manufactured price there, is what the ad valorem tax is applied to. Whether it's 65%, 75%, 90%, which is being proposed in other legislation here, this is what it's currently being applied to. So you take the effect of this bill is to take Skoll and Copenhagen, which again is UST's top premium products, controlling 88% of the premium market, and to effect increase their tax zero, and to take the lower priced products, some of which are made by our company. We also have Grizzly, which is a premium base as well, so it applies both ways to our company. And you'll see the increases as you come down. Red Seal, 70%, Husky, 53%, Timberwolf, 76%, Grizzly, 76%, Longhorn, 142%. The net effect of this weight-based is to flatline the two premium dominant market products in this state at 0% increase, and to increase the price of the others. And I'll come back and talk a little bit about market share and the chart that you have here.
Representative Gelser.
Yes, may I ask a question, please about the chart?
Yeah.
So on the chart where you've highlighted Skoll and Copenhagen, and you have the weight-based tax at $1.55, these amendments actually would set the minimum tax at $2.14. So these products also would see an increase in their tax. Can you help us understand why this doesn't suggest
that? The overall impact, as I think if you look at the final numbers, is to equate the price in the marketplace at the retail counter. I think that will be the actual impact of this. And that's the purpose. And other parts of the bill take it even farther and even worse.
I appreciate that. I just want for the committee to recognize that the data here isn't accurate if it suggests both $1.55 and 0%, since the bill does say that the minimum tax is $2.13. When Mazin and I went through the list, we couldn't find a single product that would not have at least a small increase in price, including what you've highlighted here, the bill actually says.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilser, that's correct if it's going to be. We didn't have these amendments at this point in time.
Okay, thank you.
But it has the same impact as dramatically raising up the price of the lower price market. And as you said, Representative Gelser, this is good because it protects children. I'm going to touch upon that in a minute because I maintain it doesn't, because Skoll and Copenhagen are the premier brands that children are buying, not the lower price market, but I'll come back to that. The bill would have a significant tax increase on the most expensive premium brands tax increase on the most inexpensive premium brands, and as Representative Gelser said, have some increase on the others, but I think an evening of the marketplace. Taxing moist snuff in Oregon results on a ad valorem basis, results in increased tax revenues over time. This is what happens every year as the retail or the wholesale price goes up, and it's a percent of the wholesale price, your tax revenues are going up. The most recent example of that is the federal excise tax increase, which increased moist snuff tax by 158%. That's actually going to bring in $600,000 a year and increase taxes in Oregon because the wholesale price has gone up. Again, that's an example about how the ad valorem works versus the weight-based. Again, in difficult economic times, it's hard for us to understand why we would increase or cause a significant hardship on working men and women in Oregon who buy this product, and to only enhance, again, the market share of the largest tobacco company in the country. I'd like to take you next to your last page on the handout, which comes actually from Ohio, from their tobacco-free coalition. And in most other states, the tobacco-free coalition has strongly opposed this change in taxation. The reason why they have is because they see that, as you see there in the highlighted portion, that the motive is to reduce tax rates on their higher price, there being UST premium products, while raising the tax on the lower price products sold by the competitors. And then they go on to say, however, a change to the weight-based tax would lead to serious problems for our state and our children. This is tobacco-free in Ohio, as in many other states across the country, and has been a similar position for early part of last session, and I think it changed perhaps in fairness to them at the end of the session. You also see that weight-based smokeless tax system makes brands kids use cheaper. More than half of the smokeless tobacco users between the ages of 12 and 17 use Cole and Copenhagen. Because they're popular premium brands. Again, Skoal comes in berry, cherry, and apple. Again, as a hardly a product intended for adult use. Now, why are they buying these if they're more expensive in the marketplace? The answer market researchers have discovered is it's kind of like Nike shoes. Is they are going for the key brand in a particular marketplace. And that's why Skoal and Copenhagen is used by so many younger children. Let me go to the...
excuse me just a moment. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel compelled to note that generally Nike shoes have a positive impact on children's health.
Chair, Representative
Thank you, Representative Reed.
Thank you.
Please, go ahead.
Reference has been made to the smoking tobacco master settlement agreement. Let me just try to give you some background in terms of the master settlement agreement and the distinctions between the master settlement agreement as it relates to the large tobacco companies, cigarettes, that is Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds. As you know, at least 12, 13 years ago, the Attorney General threatened to sue large cigarette tobacco makers in this country, and they reached an agreement called the Master Settlement Agreement, as distinguished from the Smokeless Settlement Agreement, which I will touch upon here shortly. In that agreement, they agreed to pay to the states directly, money to the states, $245 billion over 25 years. And this is from all the cigarette makers. And in doing so, they reached certain kinds of agreements that control advertising and marketing for the cigarette makers. At the same time, maybe a couple years later, U.S. Tobacco, under the threat of a similar kind of suit, U.S. Smokeless Tobacco, agreed to a Smokeless Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. In that, they agreed to pay $96 million over 10 years to a private foundation, not to the states, to a private foundation that, in turn, as I understand it, would do things to reduce use of that particular product. None of the other smokeless tobacco manufacturers were sued or engaged by the Attorney General's at that time. So therefore, the Smokeless Tobacco Master Settlement Agreements have produced zero income to the state of Oregon, none. And that's income, not to talk about escrow payments. That's an important distinction. And in contrast, Oregon has received from 1999, or will receive between 1999 and 2025, about $2.2 billion, which is coming in, as you know, every year. As such, in the tobacco cigarette maker agreement, there were what we call non-participating providers. In that agreement, it was allowed for the attorney generals and the companies agreed to talk about the non-participating providers, non-participating manufacturers in states as it relates to their behavior and what they would pay into an escrow agreement to equalize the marketplace. And I don't want to lose you with all the details there. But most important distinction is the Smokeless Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement did not impose and did not require or include any kind of non-participating manufacturer adjustment formula. This legislation that you have here today is one of a kind in the country related to the Smokeless Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. So why is it here? It's here because of the provisions that require that they pay in to an escrow account, not as income to the state, but into an escrow account for any future lawsuits that might occur against those non-participating manufacturers that haven't occurred in the last 10 years. So why is this here? It is here, again, to fix the market share and to protect the market share of U.S. tobacco. At this point in time, you've heard references to marketing procedures or processes by the company that have been mentioned as opposed to protecting market share. I would submit that if this bill outlined marketing prohibitions on the other smokeless tobacco manufacturers, we would not be here. We'd still be fighting about the weight-based and ad valorem, which we always have. But we would not be here today. But that's not what this bill does. If each manufacturer signed up to that master settlement agreement, which is an option, as it was indicated here, well, if they just signed up and agreed to those marketing provisions, then they have no problem. They don't have to pay an escrow. They'd have to pay the $96 million if they sign up to the master settlement agreement. And that is what you were not told. So if they choose not to...
Excuse me just a moment. Representative Gelser.
Actually, the amendment makes clear that signing on to the master settlement agreement excludes the now signing on manufacturers from the financial obligations. It's only to the sections of the master settlement agreement that pertain to the marketing and youth access. That is in that DAS-7 amendment. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gelser, I just saw the amendments. I haven't gone through all of them. If that is correct, Representative Gelser, that I would submit, let's just put those restrictions in this bill. Don't require that they pay into escrow, because what's the effect of paying into escrow? Is to increase the price of the product in the marketplace, and again, to help fix the market share of U.S. tobacco. From our point of view, if it's about marketing, and that one company has gone through certain types of restrictions and living by them, and others have not, I would submit that the other, at least our particular company, has abided by many of those same kinds of restrictions. The MSA, again, this would add a 40, in addition to the escrow amount, which you are talking about, someplace between 40 and 60 cents a tin, in addition to the difference that you're going to cause in the marketplace by raising everyone, the second and third tier prices, up to similar price of the premium brands, you're now going to put a 40 to 60 cent additional cost onto those manufacturers and their product in the marketplace. And it has been stated, well, we're trying to lower the amount of children who are participating in this market. We would submit that right now the children are choosing to, between the ages of 12 and 17, to purchase the premium brands. All this does is have impact on the adult marketing of this product between these companies. As you saw in your graph, there has been a dramatic increase in terms of third tier. This works both ways. As Representative Gelser has indicated her concern about do we have children in this increase in the third tier, we would submit you have more children in the premium brand based upon all the marketing analysis, and that we would submit this tells the story of why we're here. We are here because there has been an impact on U.S. tobacco, smokeless tobacco share, market share, and this is about trying to fix and stabilize that share. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Nelson. Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Nelson. I know what's inside a Skoll or Copenhagen can because I've seen them because my brothers and cousins unfortunately still eat the stuff. My question, and I've never, even with the two sessions now that we've been looking at this, I haven't yet been able to make the distinction between those products and perhaps the products. I mean, maybe Representative Gelser with her cans here understands what's inside these cans. What's the difference between, can I grab these?
Yep.
These are your products, Grizzly and Longhorn?
Grizzly.
Oh, okay, Grizzly. What's in this versus what's in a Copenhagen can?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, I don't know. I mean, it's smokeless tobacco.
Here's my question. Copenhagen or Skoll, which I've seen, because they're the premium brands, it's munched up, brown, shredded tobacco that you put in your lip or put in your mouth. What is that the same thing? I mean, is that what we're in your list? This is not a pointed question at all.
Sure.
This is just, I want to know if we're taxing, if we have two different taxing structures for different kinds of products, or we have two different taxing structures for similar products.
No, you have, and I may need some help behind me, but you have dry snus, or what's the word? Chew, and you have moist chew, and that's it. All comes under this category. And I'm not, again, I haven't done Grizzly, so I don't know if that's a moist or a dry. Chew, but it's basically all the same. It's smokeless tobacco that you chew. Now, the dissolvables is a new product on the market is different. But in terms of these tins, where we're really talking about the competition, they're in fact the same. It's just variations on the theme. It's like a menthol cigarette and a filter cigarette or a non-filter cigarette.
But it's the same thing. It's if I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
It's ground-up tobacco that you put in your mouth.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, that's correct, unless I am corrected behind me, and I haven't tried the product.
Then I've confused myself even more, Mr. Chair, because I don't understand why we tax it differently. I really don't.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, I'm just trying to what I'm trying to understand here is let's just accept as a given that we're fixing market share here. I'm not gonna argue about that. But the overall effect of this bill is that we're going to be significantly raising the price on some smokeless tobacco, and under the Dash 7s, raising it maybe less significantly on the premium brands. And we've heard testimony from our economist, Mr. Mazen-Malik, that raising the price is going to reduce consumption. And let's even take as a given the Nike effect, which is that it may not have the impact that we want on reducing child consumption of this product. So let's take all of your variables and put them as constants and not have any contentions about that. Given that we're raising the price and we're fixing market share potentially, we're still driving down consumption. And the overall net effect of this bill is that people will be consuming less tobacco. Some people will quit utilizing this product, and we will have an overall healthier population. Is there any argument about that fact, given even if we take every contention you've offered as true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, I think that you increase the price on this product, you may reduce sales. We've already seen, I think Mr. Madison said, the federal excise tax increase was 3.2%. We do see some decrease. At the same time, what will happen in that market, and it's a policy choice of yours, is if you want to decide you're going to equate someone's position or balance a position in this marketplace. But that's truly what's is going to happen here. You'll have some reduction, as you always do, as you increase price.
Thank you.
I agree with that.
Great.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you, sir. We appreciate your testimony
Thank
this
you, Mr.
morning.
Chairman.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard today on House Bill 2672? Yes, ma'am.
Good morning, Representative Barnhart and committee members. My name is Peggy Woolsey. I've lived in the state of Oregon for 39 years. I am currently 61. I am the white sheep of my family. I was programmed to be a tobacco user from birth. The prior two generations in my family all used tobacco. I started smoking when I was 12. I quit when I was 21. I am now the oldest member in my family, and now I'm losing my brothers and sisters. I think that raising taxes to discourage destructive behavior is viable and commendable. I don't think you can raise taxes high enough or soon enough to make me mad. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Questions for Peggy? Appreciate your testimony.
Certainly.
Is there anyone else? With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2672 and open a work session on House Bill 2672. Colleagues, Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, point of procedure first. If one was to have multiple amendments, one wanted to move, do we move them individually?
Well, I think given that they're all on different topics, you probably ought to move them individually.
In that case, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendment dated 4209 to House Bill 2672.
Representative Bailey moves the Dash 2 amendment. Colleagues, this is the amendment that adds indexing to the tax. Discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendment dated 4209 to House Bill 2672.
Representative Bailey moves the Dash 4 amendment. This is the one that sets the escrow amount at 40 cents. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Dash 4 amendment is adopted. Representative Bailey.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment dated 4209 to House Bill 2672.
Representative Bailey moves the Dash 5 amendment. This is the one that limits free sampling. Have I got that right? I do. Any discussion? Any objection? Dash 5 amendments are adopted. Representative Bailey?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 7 amendment dated 4809 to House Bill 2672.
Representative Bailey moves the Dash 7 amendment to House Bill 2672. The Dash 7 amendment establishes the amount of the tax, and the details of the requirements related to the smokeless tobacco master settlement agreement. Have I got that right? I do. Okay. Any discussion on the Dash 7 amendments? Any objection to the Dash 7 amendments? Without objection, the Dash 7 amendments are adopted. Representative Bailey?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2672 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
And a subsequent to Ways and Means.
The subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
By prior, thank you. Representative Bailey moves House Bill 2672 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a referral to the Ways and Means Committee by prior reference. Colleagues, that referral, of course, is because the bill contains some appropriations. We haven't talked much about those because, of course, the Ways and Means Committee will consider those in the mix of all of the things that it's dealing with. Discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Broom.
Section 19, which I don't think we've discussed.
Please, go ahead.
10. And my it's maybe a question for Mazin, and I'm not sure if Mazin knows the answer, but it's whether or not there's a precedent, and what I'm seeing here, and I've highlighted the points. Use of smokeless tobacco presents a serious public health concern. Going down to Section 2, use of smokeless tobacco products also presents serious financial concern. Okay. Section 3, under those health care programs, the state of Oregon pays millions of uncompensated care. Therefore, 4, and this is the question, is the policy of the state of Oregon that financial burdens imposed on the state by the use of smokeless tobacco be borne by the tobacco products manufacturers? My question is there any precedent in that in statute for any other product category from food to power tools to you name it, Mr. Chair? Or is this truly setting new precedent for the state?
Uh,
Mr. Chair, I assume this would be was taken in the Health Policy Committee, rather than I was more gleaming and sifting through the tax policy issues, so I don't know.
This is related, is it not, to the Master Settlement Agreement issues? Representative Gelser is nodding her head yes.
Sure.
Yeah, and of course it was the basic argument behind the Cigarette Master Settlement Agreement that and the lawsuits that led to it, having to do with the difficulty of paying for health care for those who suffered illnesses that were the result of their use of tobacco. And my understanding, at least, is that the information we have about smokeless tobacco use is that it tends to cause different health problems, but it causes very severe health problems as well. Some of them, of course, are the same. Systemic health problems may be the same in terms of heart disease and a variety of other things, but the kinds of cancers that tend to be caused are different because of the different application. But that's only my understanding.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Call.
And just if my recollection of the structure of the Mass Settlement Agreement is correct, at bottom, the injury to the state that was being addressed through that agreement, through litigation that preceded the agreement, was the amount we as taxpayers were paying through Medicaid and those programs to subsidize the harmful effects of tobacco. And so that when we're talking about a precedent here, I mean, the real clear precedent here is a long-term systemic injury to a whole class of people that, by and large, the average taxpayer was paying to fix. And so I don't think that there's any other product out there that is even comparable, nor is there, I think, any other litigation at the state level that is comparable as well.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not an attorney, and I can't speak well to issue of precedence, but in my opinion, that section, if it was to set a policy that the state will take a look at products that do have a negative impact on the public that the state is financially responsible for, and that is the policy of the state that we will examine those products to see whether or not we should ask those who make and use the products to pay for the cost rather than put the burden on all the taxpayers, then I think that that's a valuable statement.
Thank you, Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Chair, my only question, of course, I mean, we've had these discussions in larger national contexts. If this is the precedent we start, then why would we stop that precedent for fast food? Fast food absolutely has an ill health effect on Oregonians, of which the total cost is not paid for by the manufacturers or the Oregonians themselves, but which is in large part paid for by the public health system of Oregon in too many cases. So, not defending tobacco, I'm not defending fast food, but I'm saying it's a precedent, it's a door that hasn't been opened, we're opening with this, and I just want to sort of make that.
Certainly, you could propose a bill that would do exactly that, and of course, we do have a bill dealing with labeling of calories so that people can make better choices. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of Section 19, my understanding from talking to legislative counsel was that this was a very difficult bill to structure, and what she did in putting this piece together around the urging of the other companies to participate in the Smokeless Master Settlement Agreement was to look at policy in other states, to look at the Master Settlement Agreement and trying to fit these pieces together. Section 19, I think, is similar to preamble language we have when we pass other legislation that talks about it's kind of the value language or the reasoning behind it. And this setup here, I think, tries to speak to that question of why would we then take a company or companies that had not yet been sued or weren't under threat of being sued and ask them to comply with something that a company that had found themselves in that situation was in. So I think that Section 19 really is preamble language that explains the policy basis for why we would make that choice.
Thank you. Further discussion on the bill. The motion is to refer the bill, essentially refer the bill to the Ways and Means Committee with a do pass. I don't see any. Is there objection to the bill going to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass? I don't see any. The motion carries. The bill will go to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you, colleagues. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2672. Colleagues, we're going to carry HGR JR 13 till tomorrow in the hopes that we get the fiscal. I don't think House Bill 2014 will be ready to work. We'll have to repost that bill. Yes? Okay. With that, have I made the announcements I need to make in order to do this? I have. Committee is adjourned. Thank you.